Several miles off the main highway, tucked away in a secluded canyon on prime vineyard property, stands a rustic barn that was built many decades before the vines around it were planted. In that barn, a sophisticated broadcast and recording studio has been built. The barn also has a well-hidden root cellar stocked with many of the world's most exceptional wines, only to be shared with guests who secretly come to offer their insights and tell their stories. Guests are sworn to secrecy and are shuttled to the studio aboard a John Deere tractor. Those who cannot make the journey in person are interviewed by satellite hookup, and sometimes the crew simply sneaks away with microphones in hand and interviews guests in barrel rooms, wine cellars, and other magical places. All of this is done like clockwork every single week, so that we can bring you another episode of Grape Encounters Radio.
Peel me a grape. Crush me some ice. Skin me a peach. Save the fuzz for my pillow. Talk to me nice. Talk to me nice. You've got to wine me.
Well, it's going to be a little while before we really get to dig in and taste the wines of 2014, and at least the outlook for those wines is pretty great, but you'll probably have to wait a while. What you don't have to wait for is a taste of what happened on Grape Encounters Radio in the year 2014. As we promised you last week, we're going to take a look back at 2014, the most, at least for me, memorable moments of Grape Encounters Radio. And I really felt it was important to have in our most important cast member, Larry Gifford, the senior wine news correspondent, also a certified wino.
Hey, thanks, David. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah.
Are you calling this the Grape Encounters Vintage 2014?
Yeah, that sounds good to me.
All right, very good.
The year that was.
This was a great year for you, personally and professionally, but personally especially.
Yes, and that's a good place to start, by the way, because in January of this year, I didn't think I would do it. After 12 years of being single, I found the perfect mate for me. We got married, and it was about a month after we got married that I got a call from one of the most legendary winemakers in history, probably the most important living winemaker in my mind today, Mike Gergich, who was the man who made the Chardonnay that won the legendary Judgment of Paris. He's also the man whose story was not told correctly in the movie Bottle Shock. Did you see that movie, Larry?
I did see that movie. I like that movie, but it wasn't true.
Well, Mike doesn't like that movie. But anyway, we didn't talk about Bottle Shock this time. We've had Mike on a number of times, and we have at least touched on that subject. But it really started out with Mike talking a bit about my marriage. I never had a chance to tell him. And so as we did a special Valentine's edition of Grape Encounters Radio, we got a call from Mike Gergich, who heard about my marriage through the grapevine and shared some words of wisdom about wine and romance.
David, you make me happy. I heard the very important news today, which I didn't know, but it makes me happy that you finally find a loving woman that is making your life more enjoyable and that you live now in paradise.
Yes.
Congratulations to Annie. She get a good choice. She get the man that will love you and take care of you and make your life in earth to be a paradise. The best romance is when we have two elements of romance. It's a woman and wine. They both start with letter W. So let's get that great feeling, and that they don't forget that there is a Gergich Hills wine that can help them feel even better.
So let's talk about the Gergich Hills wines for a second. What I love, first of all, Michael, about your wines is that if the wine is not excellent, you don't sell it. And I think that's the difference between a winery like Gergich and some others, is that you won't put out an inferior product. What happens when a wine doesn't come out the way that you like it? What do you do with it?
That rarely happens, because there is like wine, I compare with the child. Wine and children sometimes behave, sometimes don't. don't behave, but your knowledge and your experience can correct that and keep the wine in the right direction. And that wine, in my judgment, best wines are made by feelings, by your eye, by your nose, by your head. It's made perfect wine, but I hope that Gergis Hills will make it someday.
We are talking to my number one hero in the wine world. He is arguably the most important living winemaker in America. He changed history. We went recently to the Smithsonian so we could see firsthand some of the personal effects of Michael Gergich there. Will you tell everybody about the importance that the Smithsonian has placed upon the Judgment of Paris in 1976?
1976, Paris tasting, definitely has been noticed by Smithsonian Institute, because nobody before has beaten French quality-wise. That's the first time in the history, and that's a history for America, that Americans have succeeded to make wine that is as good as French and even better judged by French judges. That's the history, and that's why that wine, 73 Chardonnay, that I have made for Chateau Montelena is in Smithsonian Institute among 100 most important events that make America history.
Now, let me just clarify that. The Smithsonian has tens of thousands of pieces of artwork, artifacts, inventions, you name it, that have changed the course of American history. And there are literally tens of thousands of events that have shaped our lives. But the Smithsonian narrowed it down to 100 events that were most significant, and yours was one of them.
Yes, I'm very surprised.
And, wow.
Very happy that my name is there with the Neil Armstrong who went to the moon. It's a great pride in my life that
wow.
I have mastered to make wine like that, and that I put my feelings and my love into that wine. And I do recommend people who ever like to find love in the wine, look for Gergis Hills wines.
You want a little more love in your life? Then open up a bottle of Gergis Hills, because it's made with love.
Long live love. Generally, it was accepted opinion that most enjoyable wine is somewhere about between 12 and 14% alcohol, and balance the wine so that all elements in the wine are in balance. And once you achieve balance in the grape and grape juice, we try to maintain that balance until your glass. That's what Gergis Hills have a motto: from our vineyard to your glass, naturally. We don't use insecticides, pesticides, or artificial fertilizers in our vineyard, and we use natural yeast to ferment. We use oak, which is natural for maturing our wine, and then our wine go to honeymoon, where they are going to stay minimum 1 year, in which they are going to make marriage between oakiness of oak and aroma of the grapes into bouquet. And the best wines in the world are those that have a balance and bouquet. And I forgot, love. Got to be love.
And if you don't have love, find somebody that you think you might fall in love with, get a bottle of Gergis Hills wine, and work it out.
Well, good suggestion. I agree with you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mike Gergich. It's a pleasure to talk to you. Man, I got to tell you, I am such a fan of Mike Gergich. And if you don't know this, Mike is in his 90s
Whoa.
Now. Do you drink Gergis Hills wines?
I do.
Fantastic,
oh,
right?
Oh, so good.
And you know what? You can keep a bottle of his wine around forever, because it just lasts and lasts and lasts.
Well, and his recipe for the romantic wine, the 12 to 14% alcohol and then balance, it's also the recipe for a good marriage. About 12 to 14% alcohol and balance.
All right. So from one legend in the wine business to somebody who is quickly becoming a legend, just a few miles up the road from the Gergich Hills Estate is the Raymond Vineyard, which is the kingdom of Jean-Charles Boisset.
Now, you told me about this guy. I went back and listened to this show. This guy is crazy.
No, he's not crazy.
No, I mean, just a bundle of joy.
He will make you smile. He is one of the most unpretentious people you will ever meet. He knows how to have fun with wine, and he throws a party every year. It is the Napa Gras. And about 700 people come to this party, and it is a riot. We were the only media outlet that was invited to come and cover it live.
And this is a guy who knows how to use wine to bring people together.
Yes, he does. And he also knows how to use chocolate to bring people together. And so we met with I guess we could call him the Emperor of wine, because he is quickly growing a kingdom. His family has the largest holdings of vineyard property in France, and he's bought up a number of wineries here in California as well. And so we were talking to Jean-Charles about the chocolate ladies, and rather than explaining it, I'll let Jean-Charles do that. What a story. Next on Grape Encounters Radio, don't go anyplace.
He's back, and he's not alone. Your Grape Encounter continues with David Wilson and a little help from his friends.
Who can take a sunrise, sprinkle it with you, cover it with chocolate and a miracle or two? The Candyman can.
From one legend in the wine business to somebody who is quickly becoming a legend, we met with the Emperor of Wine, because he is quickly growing a kingdom. We were talking to Jean-Charles about the chocolate ladies, and rather than explaining it, I'll let Jean-Charles do that. Jean-Charles Boisset is sitting here staring. You look very, very good tonight.
Merci beaucoup, cher ami.
You look like you've hardly had a sip of wine tonight.
Well, I keep it to bubbles. I'm very consistent.
And then you go work it off on the dance floor. Is that correct?
Oh, we got to go now together.
Will you and I be dancing together
tonight? Absolutely. We're going to be holding on each other's sides and taking the chocolate ladies from black chocolate to white chocolate. This is going to be our time.
Is this a new addition to Napa Gras?
Absolutely.
This year? First one.
Next year, we're going to have the sushi lady. She's going to be laying, and as you pick your beautiful sushi piece, you're going to discover her beautiful body covered with wasabi and ginger.
Maybe you could get ginger from Gilligan's Island.
Why not?
To do that, yes.
Why not? I count on you for that.
So a lot of men were standing around the chocolate ladies.
The Raymond melting chocolate ladies.
700 people here tonight.
It was a fun party.
What is the point of this party?
Well, the point is to bring people together. You know, people taste for 2 days. They're going to go to the auction tomorrow, which is one of the most unique and most fabulous auction in Napa Valley, where people commit to great wines that we produce for them. So it's the trade of wine to say thank you, to love wine, thank you to support Napa Valley, and thank you for coming. And we want to bring you, all of you, together and have a great time.
Now, there are some that would say, though, that you're making a very quiet attempt to become the Emperor of Napa Valley.
Oh, no, there's no
attempt. That's not true at all.
No, what I love to do is to create experience, to really emphasize on the dreams of what we do in life, and what we all want to do is to dream and travel and really go beyond what we typically are doing. So this party is all about what we all envision could be another place to go in life.
Tell me what goes on inside the mind of Jean-Charles Boisset.
Well, not much, but you're a great inspiration, because every time we spend time together, you give me 10, 20, 30 ideas.
I know, and you make $1 million off of it, and me, I'm sitting there with my pockets out looking like a rabbit.
Oh, no, you look fabulous. And, you know, the key is always to think about going beyond, going in another stratosphere. And, you know, people who love wine, it's all about themselves. So you need to take them to discover themselves even more than they know themselves. And wine is a great catalyst for that.
Well, I think for too long, people were afraid to have fun with their wine, right? They were afraid to even admit the fact that they didn't understand their wine. And so people were very mum about saying,
you have such a great
point.
I like
it, but I don't know what it is, you know?
wine is all about you. It's all about the emotion. It's not what you should say about the wine you taste. It's about what you feel. And the demonstration of tonight is everybody is having a great time. They're in touch with themselves. They express themselves and they are in touch with their emotions. And that's what wine is all about.
Jean-Charles, it's such a privilege to be at the party. If I stay here till 2 a.m, what can I expect to have happen to me?
Well, stay till 2 and you will see. Thanks so much, my friend.
Okay, now, David, I need to know, did you end up dancing with him or not?
I did end up dancing with him. And you know how Mike Gergich made over the fact that I had just gotten married? Jean-Charles was thrilled that Annie and I had gotten married, and they did a little time out on the dance floor as well.
Oh, great. One of the things that you always talk about on this show, and it's sort of a repeating theme, is the relationship between wine and music.
Right.
And you had a really interesting couple of guests this year from Russia.
Actually, 4 guests. We were taking a group of people to Eastern Europe, and one of the stops along the way was St. Petersburg, and a very well-known a cappella group from St. Petersburg was touring California, and we invited them into the studio, the St. Petersburg Men's Ensemble. Absolutely amazing. They are legendary in their country, and they came in, and they knew a lot about wine, at least about Russian wine. Don't drink it. Trust me, it's not that good. But anyway, so we talked about Russian wine, and they also sang here in the studio as well.
Is it nice to drink wine instead of vodka?
Yeah, we prefer drink wine, mostly Californian wine. We love this wine.
So let's talk about that for a second. In St. Petersburg, do you see California wine there?
Yes, we have California wines in the stores, and it's very popular now. Californian, Chile's wine, and Australian wine as well.
And then Russia has a very fast-growing wine industry as well, right? And making some very good wines, do you think? Or are you guys, you're shaking your heads, no.
No, I think not. Not yet. Not yet.
Not yet. But I know that there are some fine wineries that are going in Russia.
Yeah, mostly in the south.
In the south, yes. Where they can have drier wines. Mm-hmm. But mostly the wines that you drink are what? Sweet wines?
Sweet wines, like Porto wine. We had lots of wineries in the past Russian Republic. Now it's country like Georgia and Moldavia. They have pretty good wineries there.
So what does a bottle of American wine cost in Russia?
It costs about maybe... started from $10 per bottle.
$10 US dollars.
$10 US dollars. Yes.
Wow. Very expensive.
It's expensive.
That's expensive.
I mean,
that's not expensive.
I mean, you can buy this kind of wine here
for $2
or $3.
Two buck chuck. Wine. Yeah.
Do you get 2 buck chuck in Russia?
Mostly wine. It's Californian wine.
All duty-free stores they sell their Gallus wine.
And does that taste pretty good to you?
Yeah, I like it. Yes.
Better than Russian wine?
Of course. Yeah.
Well, no. Before we say goodbye, you guys have cooked up a little something special for me and the listeners.
Yeah.
All right, take it away.
Rape Encounters Radio with David Wilson.
Oh, yeah.
That's funny.
Rape Encounters is 100% estate-grown. We have, however, removed the pretentiousness and added a healthy dose of fun. And now, Grape Encounters with David Wilson continues.
Looks like it's you and me, Mr. Merlot. I've got a glass and 7 hours to go.
All right, we're going to go from St. Petersburg now to Bordeaux. We, earlier this year, had the opportunity to catch up with the head of marketing for the Bordeaux Vintners. And one vintner whose family has been doing it for centuries, literally. Larry, do you drink Bordeaux or are you stuck on American wines?
Well, I love a Bordeaux. And what I love about, you know, this part of the show is that you take people around the world. You're not just stuck here in California. And so you sort of test our, you know, boundaries and make us feel a little bit uncomfortable at times. But I love the European flavors in the wine. It's sort of dirty and old school, and I love that.
Dirty?
Well, it's got a little earthiness to it.
And you make the show sound dirty, Larry. All right, so here we go. It's off to Bordeaux.
I'm really really thrilled to have in the studio today a winemaker, not just a winemaker, he grows the grapes. He and his sister trade those responsibilities. He is Patrick Mazot, and he is a, get this, 14th generation winemaker. Patrick, is it fair to call you a winemaker? I guess you're not actually making the finished product, but you're growing the grapes, and then you pass them on to your sister, and if you don't get it right, she doesn't get it right.
Exactly. So I take care of the growing process. My job is to produce the best quality possible grapes, pick it and bring it to my sister, and my sister transform it in wine.
Did you and your sister always get along from the time that you were children?
Yes.
If a wine doesn't come out exactly the way that you hope it to come out, you don't blame it on her and she doesn't blame it on you?
No, because okay. It's her part of the job. My part of the job is to bring grapes and then she make what she wants with it. But we have a line and usually we are agree. But the final blend, we are together. The decision comes from together.
Okay, good. Now, also in the studio with me today is somebody I got to know a year or so ago, and I am so glad that she's back in the States today, and we have a chance to talk to her. It's Jana Kravitz-Plissoneau. And Jana, I actually never knew you were American, because you've got this like lovely French accent from not only living in Bordeaux for a long time.
Too long.
Right, but being married to a Frenchman.
Yes.
And how long have you been there?
10 years.
So you've got tenure.
Yeah. But I'm originally from New York, native New Yorker.
Now, Jana, you have an amazingly interesting position. You have one of those dream jobs in the wine world.
Yeah, it's great. I work with wineries, chateaux, especially Bordeaux and Bordeaux Superior Appellation chateaus, helping them promote their wines on the American market.
Wow. Now, that's a job. Okay, so we had a chance to visit last night, and there was a phrase that came out of that conversation that I really enjoyed, which was taking the fear out of Bordeaux. Now, Patrick, I don't think you realize that some Americans familiar with Bordeaux live in fear of Bordeaux, because there is, a sense here that if you know a little bit about it, it's a place that exists far above our aptitude and most people's understanding of wine because there's so much history there. You come from 14 generations of winemakers. Tell me what it really is like in Bordeaux. Is it a lot of people driving around in fancy cars, living in gigantic chateaus and drinking the very finest of wines and champagnes and eating caviar for breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Or is it something different?
Some of people are like that, but it's absolutely not the totality of the person there. The biggest chateau are owned by big society, so it's not like that.
Yes.
After all around Bordeaux, there is many, many, many little chateau and owned by family. It's family vineyard. People grow the vines, people make the wine, and they fight every day for their bottles. They fight every day to produce good wine. They fight every day to sell the wine. They fight every day to make people know their wine. And it's a nice place to live, that's absolutely sure, but it's not a hype place.
So you're saying that the majority of the people who actually live there are just simple, everyday average people?
They go outside on the field to work, and they make their job, and that's it. But there is, in France, there is also a point of view from Bordeaux. It's not a fear. It's more, they see Bordeaux as hype. You know what I mean by hype? Or
hype, you mean?
Yeah.
Yes.
Many people in France think that people in Bordeaux are hype. There is a few part in Bordeaux concerned by that. Majority is family working, is land worker. So you don't have to be afraid of Bordeaux.
You don't? Okay.
Don't be afraid. Come and visit us. It's a nice way of life. We produce premium wine. We try to provide the best quality possible at best price possible. A kind of wine you can drink every day. You don't going to be ruined. You're going to spend all your money on it, you know?
You're not going to go broke on it.
Exactly.
Jana, what does that translate into in terms of dollars and cents for a bottle of everyday Bordeaux in American dollars?
For the Bordeaux AOCs, you can get an excellent bottle, great quality for in what's in the bottle, for $11, $12, you know, under $15. When the Bordeaux Superior appellation, you can get a fantastic bottle from the $14, $15 up to $30, but most of them in the $15 to $25 range.
What is interesting in Bordeaux and Bordeaux Supérieur is the large number of châteaux. Whatever you like, I think, I guess, you're going to find it there. You're going to find something who fit on what you like.
Hey, Larry, are you a fan of Wilfred Wong?
Who is not a fan of Wilfred Wong?
Well, some people on the East Coast who are not familiar, perhaps, with Wilfred, who was the head cellar master for BevMo, which is a huge wine and liquor chain, mostly on the West Coast. But Wilfred has a reputation all over the world as being one of the true wine experts, a very down-to-earth guy, but he got a little too down-to-earth in this segment.
Well, yeah, I mean, this is one of the segments that got you the most feedback from your listeners.
Oh, my gosh, they were livid. We were talking about putting something in wine that you see a lot of people do, but it did not set well with the listeners. But Wilfred said, well, you know what? Who cares? You know, Wilfred is his own man. And here we go with Wilfred Wong giving us permission to do something that I would never do. On your mind today, the mind of Wilfred Wong.
How about ice cubes in wine?
Oh, God. Ice cube and wine in the same sentence.
Well, I'm saying this because among most of us wine drinkers, we need to serve wine at the precise temperature and the right glass. A lot of wines that are served by all kinds of people are not of that ilk. They're just good, basic wines. And what if your Chardonnay is just too warm because you freaking forgot to put it in your refrigerator and then you're at a party? Well, then I'd say just go to the freezer, grab ice cubes, put them in there, make sure they don't melt too much. A little bit's okay, I guess.
Well, that's going to do it for Grape Encounters today. So glad that you could be with us. Thanks to my guest, Wilfred Wong. No. Are you serious?
Well, you know what? It's all about enjoyment. Pleasure and enjoyment.
Oh.
If the Chardonnay is too warm because you were not smart enough to chill it down, or use it for too busy.
Why not take it and just shove it in the freezer for about 10 minutes?
Well, that works too.
How about getting one of those automatic chiller things?
It's even better if you have it. But
how about caring enough about your wine drinking habit that you keep your wine at the right temperature to begin with?
That would be good.
Be a responsible wine drinker.
That would be good, but it doesn't always happen.
Okay, so I've got an alternative for you, Wilfred.
Yes.
Are you ready for this? Okay. Whiskey stones.
I've seen those and I've used those and they are good.
You know they are, right? Yeah. Yes. Okay.
Yes. In fact, they are a very good accoutrement to wine.
Now, you can get those plastic ice cubes, you know, that have the coolant stuff inside, but that doesn't look good in your wine glass. But whiskey stones, I think, got a little class. In fact,
whiskey stones are good, but they're expensive.
Wilfred, do you not drink expensive wine?
I do.
Okay, then why are you concerned about how expensive a whiskey stone is? Reusable, Wilfred. Wouldn't it be nice if wine was reusable? Actually, some wine does taste like it was reused. All right, go ahead.
When I have an incredible wine to have, I'm going to orchestrate it so well that we don't need to resort to secondary measures.
Oh, so what you're saying is that when you invite me over to your house, if you're going to serve me a wine that needs to be chilled, it will be chilled to the right temperature.
Of course.
I will tell you this, Wilfred, if you come to my house and in the unlikely event that I didn't get the wine chilled down to the right temperature, there will be a glass of whiskey stones waiting for you.
When you invite me to dinner, you will not make mistakes of that nature. I'm sure.
Thanks to wine.com for loaning us the inimitable Wilfred Wong. You say what you think, don't you, Wilfred?
Of course.
Okay, Larry, are you convinced that it's okay to put ice cubes in wine?
Well, you always say play with your wine, so I mean, I tend to think maybe it's okay, especially on a hot day in the middle of summer. I'm absolutely putting some ice cubes
in there. I say play with it, not ruin it. That's why I have whiskey cubes.
Well, you do encourage blending of wines, though.
Yes, in fact, in this next segment, I sat down with Sarah Schneider, a regular on our show. She is the wine editor of Sunset Magazine, one of the largest lifestyle magazines in the known universe, and Margot True, the legendary food editor of Sunset Magazine. We talked about the competition that I was in, a cooking competition at a huge wine festival where I did something that was unthinkable, at least to Margot True. I blended 5 different wines together. She really was afraid to try my concoction, but things changed after she had a chance to sample it, and we talk about that now. Talk about excited. Not only are we doing Sipping with Sarah, we're doing Sipping with Margot, too. Margot True, the food editor of Sunset Magazine. One of the last times I saw you was a competition that I was cooking in. Do you remember that?
Oh, yes. It was Last Savor the Central Coast.
How come you weren't a judge there? I would have won if you had been a judge, wouldn't I?
I'm very objective. I'll just say that. I would have given everybody equal shakes.
You're not going to admit on radio that you would have favored my dish.
I can't say.
All right, never mind. Okay.
It was my role to MC, so honestly, I wasn't tasting everything with that in mind.
There was something that I did do in that competition. It was a cooking competition, which I should have won. I did something that I don't think anybody's ever done before. I blended 5 different wines to create a wine that I thought would be the perfect blend for the dish that I cooked, which was an oyster dish, which isn't easy, by the way.
No, not at all. It is not an easy thing to do.
You were kind of, I think, repulsed by the idea of somebody sitting up there mixing wine together.
It is an unusual practice, I have to say, to uncork or open.
I had them in beakers.
That's true.
On
you
dry
had them,
ice
you had them
dry
in beakers. That was
whole.
Very dramatic.
Yeah, it was.
That was really great. Very theatrical. Lots of flair. But typically people don't pour presumably finished wines, into a mixing vessel. So it was surprising and it was interesting to watch. And I gave you lots of credit for going where people don't normally go before, because borders should always be pushed.
Sarah and I have whipped up something we want you to try.
Sure. It's an honor.
You have a glass in front of you.
Okay.
And I want you to just go ahead and sip it. It's kind of yellowish. Sniff it. It smells good, huh?
It smells nice. Smells refreshing. A little bit citrusy, possibly. Wow. That's dynamic.
Are you just saying that now?
No, I'm not just saying that. I'm really enjoying it. It tastes like, well, and I mean this in a good way. It tastes like Jolly Rancher candy, but good.
Let us tell you what's in it.
Okay. It has lots of, yeah.
Sarah, go for it.
Okay. Starting from the bottom, the juice of 10 limes.
50 Jolly Ranchers.
At least. 1 can of frozen lemonade, organic, natural.
Mm-hmm.
So the frozen concentrate is in there.
And now the shocking ingredient.
A whole bottle of Chardonnay.
Ah, oaked or unoaked?
Oaked.
Oaked.
Okay.
Oaked better emulates the taste of tequila. So what we've made here is a wine margarita for you.
Wow, that's cool.
It's so simple.
Mm-hmm.
And it does taste like a margarita. Well, cross between a margarita and, would you say, Sarah, a Jolly Rancher maybe?
You're having a grape encounter with David Wilson. What a way to spend the day. Like certain wines, he's syrupy, sweet, and has long legs. Here's David Wilson.
Well, I'm wine, drinker, I'm wine, drinker, I'm wine.
It was the world's record grape stomp. It happened in Jamestown, New York, at the Lucy Desi Center for Comedy. Jamestown, of course, being the home of Lucille Ball. We had Journey Gunderson on, who's the executive director of that center. They blocked off, I think it was a couple of blocks, Larry, and then they filled it with grapes. Guess where they got the grapes from?
Where?
Guess.
Grapevines?
Oh, no. They got it from Welch's.
Oh, really? That's great.
No, that's grape, Larry.
Oh, David.
It's probably the single most iconic moment in television or the movies having to do with wine. It's been something that's been repeated at wineries all over the world for years and years and years. It's the iconic scene with Lucille Ball stomping grapes and the Lucy Desi Center for Comedy in Jamestown, New York. Take that scene and Lucille Ball's comedy very seriously. On the line with us now is Journey Gunderson. She is
the executive director of the Lucy Desi Center and the National Comedy Center. And Journey, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
This is so amazing. You had 1,232 people there, and tell us what they did.
Sure. We got 1,232 people to participate in setting a new Guinness World Record for most people grape stomping, which involved 60 tons of locally grown Concord grapes in a vat that we built that was about the size of a city block.
No, really?
Yes.
Let's start with the vat. How do you build a vat that's a city block long?
With the help of Artone Manufacturing, a company that's local to Jamestown here. The owner happens to be a board member on the National Comedy Center board. So he built the walls, and we actually, the base of the vat, we just used 2nd Street in downtown Jamestown and worked closely with the city on this. And we knew the existing record was 977 people held by a small city in northern Spain. And we've been celebrating Lucille Ball here in her hometown for decades. But as part of our mission to celebrate comedy in Jamestown, we wanted to do this to pay tribute to one of the most iconic comedy scenes. You mentioned it was one of the most iconic wine-related scenes in entertainment history, but it's certainly also one of the most iconic comedy scenes in TV history. Lucille Ball playing Lucy Ricardo stomping grapes.
Okay, so the pavement was the bottom of the vat then?
That's correct.
I don't think that's ever been done in the wine industry.
No. I mean, our streets are clean, but I don't know if they're that clean.
Okay. So I take it that the grapes that were stomped were not used for wine.
That's correct. We thought that the health department might have a problem with that.
No, the alcohol in the wine will kill all the germs. That wasn't a problem. I could have helped you with that.
Yeah. Well, we do have some commemorative bottles of Stomped with Care wine directly from Jamestown, New York, made with our own Concord grapes. So you can contact the Lucy Desi Center for how to get one of those world record release bottles.
Oh, fantastic. Now, let's talk about the Spanish for a second, because they held the record. And before I got you on the line, I tried to find any evidence of any riots in Spain over this. But I guess the Spanish took it pretty well. Or have you gotten any hate mail from Spain?
Not yet. And I have to admit, I'm really smiling as you say that, because in the weeks leading up, I kind of thought, hey, maybe we should start some friendly overseas trash talk over this thing and let them know what we're doing and that we intend to break their record. But then wisely, I thought, well, that could go really badly if we have a cold day and a bunch of people decide not to show up. And for some reason, the record doesn't get broken. I mean, it went so smoothly and people had such a fun time, but behind the scenes, in the planning of it, there were a lot of things we were concerned with and just wanted to make sure it went well. So I thought better of starting kind of an online trash talk session with Spain until I knew that we were going to break the record. So
Journey,
Spain, if you're listening, we congratulate you on having set it in 2012. Unfortunately, now Jamestown holds the title.
All right, I'm going to give you the opportunity now, Journey, to say na 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 na.
I don't know how that translates into Spanish.
It's universal. Go for it.
Is there an enye over the N? It would be na 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 na.
There you go.
I love how you have so much fun with wine on this show, and talking to people like Journey Gunderson just reminds you about how much fun the wine lifestyle can be. And also, you talk about wine and like Lucille Ball, wine also made its way into the movies this year with Ian Coble and that documentary Psalm.
You know what? I'll tell you what. Wine movies are getting a lot of attention. I think it all started with Sideways, which of course changed the way we think and drink. But there was a character on a movie who was actually playing himself. The movie was Psalm, as you said. Ian Coble really became a star out of that movie. There were 5 guys that were competing to become Psalms, not against each other, but against themselves. And Ian was the only one actually that didn't make it, but he came back, fought hard, became a Psalm, and he's become a really high-profile character. And, of course, we had to have him on the show. I'm talking to Ian Coble. He is the star of Psalm. And if you haven't seen the movie, definitely check it out. If you're a wine lover, it is a must-see because you will learn so much from watching that movie. One of the things that I learned, Ian, was that you started drinking wine and identifying wine characteristics as a kid. How old was that?
Yeah, you know, I started when I was 5, 6, 7 years old. My dad would just give me wines and have me smell it and taste it. And, you know, I wasn't necessarily even thinking about what I was doing. You know, my dad would, you know, let me taste cigars or a good beer or something like that. I don't even remember it. I didn't even know that footage had been taken until I was sitting in the movie theater watching it. My dad gave it to the director without even asking me. Which
I was just wondering whether the other teens, as you were growing up, were jealous when you uncorked a Cabernet in the cafeteria.
Yeah, no, I would usually hide it in a water bottle or something. You know, they thought I was drinking Welch's. You know, they didn't know I was drinking classified Bordeaux.
Right? Was there any fear in your family that your parents would be arrested for serving a minor?
No. So they have a very European view of life. I mean, if you're in Europe, you grow up in France, you're getting wine at the dinner table watered down. You know, alcohol was never something that my parents, you know, made me afraid of or, you know, even, in, you know, wanted me to drink. It was just a part of our daily life, and they had me taste it. And I think that's why you don't run away from home looking to go, you know, drink a bunch of vodka when you get to college, because, you know, I don't look at it as something you have to go out and have. It's always been a part of our life, and I think that's the better way of looking at it.
Amen to that, I'll tell you. And I think even more so today, kids are not running off and sneaking booze like they used to. You know, when I was a kid, it was like scoring something from mom and dad's liquor cabinet was a pretty big deal.
I still did do that.
So, David, at the end of the Grape Encounters Vintage 2014, take a sip of it. How would you describe this year for you?
You just threw me out of a loop. You know, Larry, that's like asking what's your favorite wine. You know, seriously, I would say that 2014, when it comes to Grape Encounters Radio, was absolutely the perfect blend.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, everybody.